This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Frida Liu, and we've got the folks from Digital News Asia here, Chong Jin Seung and Kiranjit Kaur. Jin, let's start with you. You have a crypto-based story. They're called Krypton Crab.
Yeah.
It's a new virtual pet trading game by iCandy Interactive, so it's a crypto game. That's new.
Yeah, but it's not the first crypto game that you'll find in the market. I think probably last year you heard of a little-known game called Crypto Kitties, where people are trading virtual cats and such using crypto.
Okay.
Well, I'm not sure of how exactly they're doing it, but not to detract from this current story, Krypton Crab is quite different from Crypto Kitties. So actually, as you said, it's made by a mobile game company called iCandy Interactive. They are listed in Australia, and they are actually headquartered here. Well, not headquartered in Singapore, but they have a branch over here in Malaysia as well. So yes, they actually, I spoke to their chief operations officer, Desmond Lee, just yesterday, and they are quite excited over the launch of this game, or upcoming launch. So they're launching a pre-sale campaign right now. But he was telling me a bit of details on how this is their first crypto game and is one of many in the pipeline they're going to make. So just a little bit about it. Yeah, you're going to be collecting virtual crabs, and they are going to be hosted on the Ethereum blockchain. I can see you wincing already. This sounds ridiculous to you, right? In a way.
No, just to tell someone you've got crabs.
Yeah. Well, these are not yummy. They're not chili crabs or yummy crabs that you can find.
And not the other kind.
Yeah, not that kind. But these are uniquely generated crabs. And actually, as I understand it, not sure whether it's the same as Crypto Kitties, but basically you own a line of code that is basically sitting within the Ethereum blockchain. So if you're familiar with blockchain, you kind of like put it up. It's a digital ledger system whereby you're hosting it and everybody can see everybody's ledger books. It's really open. So by doing this, they are putting tokens, digital tokens, onto each crab that you generate. So they're randomly generated and they have different attributes and the look. So in the case of Crypto Kitties, they look kind of different. They got funny color. They can even make them look ugly if they want to. But in the case of Krypton crabs, you have different attributes like different claws, legs, the colors, the features of it.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, I mean, this is what people are generally getting into. Uh-huh. So you can think of it similar to how you're like trying to ride your Pokemon or your digital monster in the 90s and stuff like that, but you're taking this online. And it's a fully web-based game. It's not on mobile or anything yet, but you are trying to, this is played on your web browser, or you can surf it on Chrome or something, even on your phone as well. And they're even promoting a battle system, if you can believe it. So hence why I say it's something like Pokemon. You're kind of like having a contest between different crabs like that. So if like you have one in mind, then we can fight against each other. And if mine comes on top, and if I have a winning streak of crabs, of one or two crabs, you can own multiple. So if yours wins a lot, it kind of ups the value of that crab. So all this, at the moment, kind of a perceived value. It's nothing quite tied to anything real world. So I mean, like, you're kind of generating that. It remains to be seen how successful it will be yet. I mean, we have to wait and see when they finally launch it. I think they're targeting probably sometime in October, or maybe end of the quarter, because
right.
I saw their pre-sales going about 20 something of this month. So but I think it's interesting. Eventually they're going to have an auction house. They're going to be trading. So buy, sell, trade, fight. That's kind of like what you're going to do with it.
And I guess you when you gamify things, right, it just gets people a little bit more excited, I guess.
It is. And, you know, the funny thing is that this is actually built on top of another game they've made called Crab Wars. So they take inspiration from that and they're hoping to target mobile gamers, though the first target market is, of course, your crypto guys who are into cryptocurrencies and crypto, anything into crypto, the crypto ecosystem. So that's who they're targeting. But they're hoping to reach out to a broader market, hopefully, with this gamification system. Makes things more interesting.
Okay. Kiran, you are the Malaysian Rice Bowl Awards. 18 winners will represent Malaysia at the ASEAN Awards. Droppy founder Lenise Ng won Founder of the Year, and Startup of the Year was Carson.
Yep.
Tell us more about that one.
Okay, so Lenise Ng, she won Founder of the Year. She's from Droppy. And Droppy is also won the award for Best Newcomer.
Okay.
So they've been in operations for a year. And what they do is they're in the B2B marketplace. They find that, so what Lenise found was that in Malaysia, there's a lack of connectivity between supplier and retailers. So what they do is they connect retailers to wholesalers and manufacturers, and they find that they do it in a more efficient and faster way. So I think this is one company to look out for, because they've gained, they've done a lot within this past 1 year to be recognized, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think Linnis is also quite young. She's only 26 years old. Mm. Mm-hmm. And she's the first female winner also.
Okay. Oh, okay. For Founder of the Year, right?
Yeah.
We had the Minister of Communications and Multimedia, Gobind Singh, also there, right?
Yeah. So he presented the main awards of the night. So that was the Startup of the Year to Kasim, mm-hmm. and to the Founder of the Year. And I think his presence there was quite important. It shows that he's really committed to growing the startup scene.
Yeah,
and also he mentioned that his commitment towards the connectivity, internet connectivity in our country, is to mainly support the tech industry, to help it grow. So yeah, he was there. And the other thing they mentioned was also they're having a 4-day finale in Bali for the ASEAN level Rice Bowl Awards.
Okay.
So all 18 winners will be there competing against other ASEAN countries. And the reason why it's 4 days is also because it's a networking event, essentially. Mm. So what MINEF is going to do, MINEF is the New Entrepreneurship Foundation. They're going to connect these companies to investors, so they're inviting high net worth families to come and join them in Bali and connect with these companies.
Who are the other winners?
Oh, some of the other winners are Hyperlab for best AI and machine learning startup, and Joan Parking, best IoT startup. Mm. VD won best life helper. I think also Magic won for best accelerator for their GAP program.
Okay, life helper.
Yeah, I suppose because VD is in the tourism scene, right?
Mm-hmm. It's more than just tourism, right? They are doing other services, as, apart from just like, it's Aaron Sarma's startup,
yes,
right?
Correct.
So they are doing more of just, trying to connect people with activities on the ground, but he's doing more than that right now, isn't it?
I'm not really sure what he's going into, because VDS hasn't actually officially launched, I believe.
Right.
They changed the name from Tourist.ly.
Yes, that they've officially changed.
Right. Yep. Okay, all right. Okay. Now, if you've come across anything that's named Black Rose Lucy, be aware, because the new research by Checkpoint Software shows that it's the latest malware as a service. Malware as a service.
Yes.
Oh my god. My goodness. Targeting and infecting Android smartphones and tablets. So how does this function?
So actually, it is developed by a Russian-speaking team, supposedly. So isn't it always the Russians who are making this, apparently? So it's described as a cyber Swiss army knife that's used to orchestrate wide ranges of attacks. Mm. But they're starting small. As I understand from Checkpoint Software's study, they say that they're starting small. They're showing like proof of concept before they go for, you know, your malware as a service, your software as a service, you got malware as a service now. So it's a business model. I mean, you sell it to hackers who want to conduct attacks, and it affects Android smartphones and tablets as well. So it's quite scary in a way, because once it takes over your smartphone, you're more or less at the mercy of the hackers, because they can listen into what you're doing. You probably can log what you're doing, see what you're doing on screen. It's more or less, it's worse than having, you know, you can't cover up this webcam and that's it, I'm safe. No, because they can look at what you're doing on screen, so everything is being recorded.
Oh.
It's probably better. So the advice is that you got to keep all your apps, OSs updated. Don't download as usual from any unknown sources, aside from the Google App Store. And you better be suspicious if the app is calling for more than... Because usually when you approve of an app, it usually asks you for permission to access certain things. So like if it's asking you for more than usual, so like you got to be a bit suspicious. But... this thing has been out for a while now, so it's better to be safe than sorry, I guess, lah. And aside from taking over your phone, it's also going to make you mine for cryptocurrencies and even tap on ads as well to generate revenue from ads.
This is the reality, yeah?
Yeah, since Zoff isn't around, I have to be the scary one to put all these scary news, lah. But hopefully, you know, everyone will be on board, and after hearing this, they should stay safer.
All right. Okay. We've got some corporate stories, not so scary ones, after this. I'm here with Chong Jun Seong and Kiranjit Kaur from digitalnewsasia.com. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Ballsy football moves. BFM 89.9.
If you've just joined us, this is Frida Liu, together with Chong Jin Seo and Kiranjit Kaur from digitalnewsasia.com. We're talking about some of the tech stories. We talk about crabs. We talk about crabs. The Lazy Rice Bowl Awards. Kiran, you recently spoke to Muhammad Ali Alawala.
Yep.
Right, and he's the CEO of Standard Chartered Sadiq, there's one across the road, about digital innovation and how it's totally customer-focused for them.
Yeah, so Standard Chartered Sadiq is the Islamic banking arm of Standard Chartered. And what we really wanted to find out was how innovation was being driven within... So he spoke generally from Standard Chartered's perspective because it works the same way. And what's interesting is he specifically mentioned that they have not set up an innovation team. So... I think I talked about this in my last BFM show. A lot of companies make the mistake of setting up an innovation team that is separate. So yeah. what that does is it separates your innovation from your main business function.
Right.
And so Standard Chartered has had the foresight to not do that, you know. And what they do is he says it's really embedded in their culture. Everybody is encouraged to think outside the box. And it's interesting because they've really innovated. They've introduced video banking. They're the first bank in Malaysia to introduce video banking. And what that he said, mostly the adoption for that is for their more premier customers because they prefer the face-to-face touch. But also, chat banking is another thing that they've introduced. And that is becoming increasingly more popular because... as you know, it's more convenient to just go on your phone and text. He said customers are more used to that now. And one of the things that he mentioned was also, so Standard Chartered announced, the parent company announced a USD $3 billion investment in 2015 towards upgrading their system and technology. So what they attributed more is not towards the monetary investment, but more towards how... they understand their customers' needs. So the head of digital, Izzuddin Danyan Izam, he stressed how Standard Chartered actually spends a lot of time understanding their customers, and it really reflects in their adoption rate. So they're at a 45% right now, and the global average for Islamic banking is at a 39%, so they're higher.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. So I think that's the direction. I don't know if other banks have all gone on this journey as well.
I think they have to.
Right. They have. That's
the big disruptor like fintechs, and obviously, exactly. As you say, they have to think out the box and start thinking like a startup in a way as well, right? And don't work in silos as how they are normally doing
used
within
to.
Departments and such like that.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
And one of the things he also highlighted was the fear of failure. So. Many corporates are scared to innovate because they fear failure, right? And also, so what we asked him was, how do you prevent your staff from being afraid to voice out an idea that they have? If they have a brilliant idea that, you know, but what if they're afraid to fail and then the blame comes back to them? So he said that there's never a single point of failure, that when something fails, it's never like, oh, it's your fault. Once an idea comes about, it's already Standard Chartered's idea, essentially. So they're all in it together at the end of the day. And they always work in cross-functional teams. So it's never like just one department that has failed. It's always the bank all together.
Right. Okay. And I think it's a good idea as well. You shouldn't separate innovation. It's like, you know, I mean, it should be a culture, you
organic.
Know, organic culture across the board as well.
Mm.
Jin, the Economist Intelligence Unit conducted a study commissioned by SAP on planning for prosperity. It takes a look at family business leaders across Southeast Asia and how they rated their future readiness across categories of people, environment, process, and technology. So family businesses in Malaysia ready for the future?
Sadly, the problem is that they're not very confident about this. This is compared to the other peers in Southeast Asia. So Thailand, oddly enough, Thailand is rated as the most confident.
Mm.
And you may be shocked also, but Singapore's we are not far behind. Singapore is not far behind us. They're actually second worst in terms of like leveling how they're confident they are. So actually that even surprised SAP Malaysia's Duncan Williamson. That was also taken by surprise. So this call is primarily looking at how, you know, they are looking at how companies are ready for digital innovation, whether they are ready to take it to the next step. And majority, I think, though they are ready in terms of like they understand what cloud computing is and how that's going to benefit the business in terms of efficiencies, but they're still not very sure on how to leverage on AI, machine learning. And these are like big words to your average CEO within the company. What is AI, machine learning? You have to explain it to them. So like, I think also the Economist Intelligence Unit also noted that because they did a study in several regions, Southeast Asia, and they also did one in South Asia within India, and they noted that actually within, say, India, they have older organizations where the family-run businesses are in the fourth or fifth generation already. In Southeast Asia, our family-owned businesses are not as old, so some are even in the first or second stages of first or second generation. Like that passing the baton is just only happening. So change is not so common for them. So naturally, if you're talking about change, you're talking about the younger generation. You need to step up and take over. Who may be more tech savvy, who may understand this, may be more comfortable in implementing changes within the toward the business using new technologies. So part of it also working back, and maybe you can attest to this, Frida, how companies are planning for things. Part of the study shows that 60% of the respondents only formally discuss their broad strategy plans every quarter, and only 30% do it, you know, once in a month. So in your opinion, is that really often enough? And when you talk to not startups, but corporations, do they normally have these meetings as often, or do they normally be faster in that?
I would think they don't. Probably you're about right. You know, I think even doing it quarterly is quite a big feat already.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
your average startup does like weekly meetings or even you know daily. So like if you're doing it in a quarter, you're not doing fast enough. So it's also a mindset kind of change you got to do. MDEX VP of Enterprise Development, Gopi Ganasalingam, he also talked about how the younger generation needs to advise the older generation on how technology enables them to be more efficient and perhaps also get, you know, expertise from data scientists and stuff to drive home, drive more value out of data that they're sitting on, apparently. I mean, they are sitting on. So, the last thing I probably will take away from this actually is that the Economist Intelligence, someone from the Economist side, he talked about how he advised that the company shouldn't do their digital transformation stage all at once. It in incremental stages. Don't do a whole big overhaul, because that could take 18 months.
Right.
And by the time you're done with 18 months, that technology is out of date already. So take it in stages, take it slowly. Have the younger generation come in, advise the older ones, and you know, maybe the first generation should maybe be more comfortable in like having the reins over, and hopefully, you know, they can pick up from there. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Kieran, Malaysian SMEs and manufacturers are still lagging behind. Just not all very, very bleak. Still lagging behind in harnessing the power of big data analytics. You know, relates back to Jinsu, sorry. So this is what the next Big Tech Asia 2018, right? They organized a track of sessions catering to this group. And the panel session was titled Leveraging Digital Technologies Using Cloud and Big Data to Transform the Business Model. So very long title. Insights on this session.
So essentially what this session was about is to cater towards the SME and manufacturers in Malaysia particularly, because I think it's common knowledge that many people say they're still stuck in industry 2.0 when we are already at 4.0.
Family-owned businesses, lah.
Exactly. Yes.
And also manufacturing business. Yeah, family-owned businesses. So they invited three people. So these were the CEO of Soka Malaysia, Leon Sing Fung, CEO of Superhands, Mark Koh, and Sohan Maheshwar. He's the Alexa evangelist from Amazon India.
Okay.
So these three people were on the panel. And so the main thing that they brought to the table was that they tried to tell the audience that big data brings you business value. Because at the end of the day, lots of businesses, they just look at your balance sheet at the end of the day. That's the main priority of businesses. So to make a change is difficult. They're hesitant in that perspective. So what he gave an example, Leon, he gave an example because he's in the car sharing business, SoCar, and he works very closely with car manufacturers. So his example was, he gave an example of how manufacturers can use data to increase car safety. He says, many of us don't know, but every single car these days comes with a controller area network that collects data about your driving behavior. Mm-hmm. And with all this data, your companies, your manufacturers, can make your driving experience more safe, you know, safer at the end of the day.
So, I'm sure they won't be selling to insurance companies to say how you're actually performing.
Well, they talked
the
about
road.
Data privacy at the end of at the end also. So, but this was one of the points that he highlighted, and he said, so when you think about it, even if it's a 0.001 percent improvement to safety, in the long term, it is a cost saving to you as a producer. So he says that's something that companies have to adapt to. They cannot just sit and say, oh, it's just a little bit of incremental value. You have to think about it in the long term as well. And interesting that you mentioned data security, because he said data security, being concerned about leakages and data security should not be something that impedes you from using big data. He used Europe as an example. So in Europe, if you have, they have very strict data privacy laws, and it can cost you up to 4% of annual revenue a year in fines if you were to breach those laws. So this is there in place, but yet it does not stop these companies from harnessing the power of big data and innovating, you know. And what it does is, he says, it really helps companies to make better and faster decisions, and it also helps to cover up some of your blind spots. Right. You know, humans, we may have some blind spots, we may overlook a few things, but with this machine learning, big data in place, chances are you'd find the problems much easier. And also, so they're in the new economy businesses. So Superhands, they are in the business of matching, outsourcing business, basically. And what SoCar is doing is they're in the car sharing business. And it's really about the, he talked about the trust gap. So he said, new economy is really about having trust. Okay. What makes you want to go and stay in somebody else's house, or what makes you want to enter a car with somebody driving it? So there's a fear there, right? But what technology does is it helps to bridge the gap between the trust gap, basically. And that is what has benefited them. So he said technology in that sense can really help you get closer to your customers, and companies should really look into big data.
All right. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's obvious. I mean, we've been talking about it as well, right? And the bigger corporations, but there's still, you know, is it the fear of investing, you know, that in that technology to get that information? But it is an investment, because, and you will get your ROI once you get that information.
It's maybe also, they're just not familiar with it yet.
Yeah, and it's also difficulty to convince their C-suite level of the benefits of these, because they're so used to the old way of looking at, you know, just revenue and how it'll affect their balance sheet, that they don't see the long-term value. They can't really wrap their minds around it.
Okay. Well, thanks for being with us. You know, just to round up some stories from the last month. Chong Jin Seung and Kiranjit Kaur from DigitalNewsAsia.com. You've been listening to Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to BFM.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.